Thank you very much, the chairman, especially for your kind welcome.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I cannot allow an honour to pass which has been bestowed upon me erroneously. It was Colonel Alcott who took theosophy to New Zealand.
Oh, thank you.
A little before my time.
You can't help me, but
I'm sorry, I wouldn't have wished to correct you publicly for a moment, but I couldn't let that pass. I hope
you
don't mind.
No, I'm pleased to be here. Have it adjusted.
Well, I'm going to treat this as a study time together and talk briefly on the subject of Kundalini, the serpent fire, and then illustrate my talk by a few slides from my collection. This study of the subject must, however, not be regarded in the remotest degree as an encouragement to try and arouse the sleeping serpent fire in oneself. So I am on record as warning against that practice, unless under the direct guidance of a senior in occult science. There are very grave dangers indeed connected with the process, even then. We may, however, usefully study the subject academically, and for many good reasons. One, the time will come when it may be aroused in us for our greater usefulness to humanity, and because there is so much information, some of it I think myself to be dangerous, which is being made available to the public today. It is a very fascinating, attractive, intriguing topic, and large numbers of people study it. Some think they will gain power over their fellow men in various ways if it is aroused, and so there is going on an unfortunate dabbling with this very great power. Yes, in addition, it is stirring in many people naturally today, I think, as the race evolves and our sensory faculties become more and more refined and sensitive, so the tendency for a possible sixth sense to be added to the present five does exist, even in children who bestow or display the possession of forms of clairvoyance, psychic tendencies, some of which are very distressing, not only in children but in elders in whom this force may and does awaken and causes very disturbing symptoms. Whirlings in the head, senses of being touched, and emotional upsets, and a certain mental instability, or in addition, perhaps, real visions, which can be very harmful indeed, because they induce a sense of superiority over others. It's one of the worst dangers which can confront a human being, probably. And for all these reasons, therefore, I warn most seriously against any attempts whatever to arouse this power and encourage an academic study of the subject. What then is Kundalini? Of course, it's a Sanskrit word, Kundalini. That's a feminine suffix. So we have a feminine force which moves in a serpentine path, Kundalini. I will just read to you from various books on the subject a number of titles or descriptions of this tremendous power. It is, for example, described as the cosmic creative fire in universe and man. The cosmic creative fire in universe and man. Other names, each one of them, I suppose, accurate in a certain way. A number of these consists of the power of life. One of the forces of nature. The creative principle in nature. The subtle, supersensuous, spiritual essence which pervades all space. Now comes a definition which refers to it, tattva, which under which it moves in a serpentine path. And so another description of it, even a translation of the word Kundalini, the coiled up universal life principle. In our studies of theosophy, we might put all these together and describe Kundalini as a sevenfold superphysical occult power in universe and man. I suppose that's as good a definition as we might get. A sevenfold superphysical occult power in universe and man. In man, it functions by means of a spiral or coiling action, mainly in the spinal cord, as we'll see from the slides, but also throughout the three nervous systems. Following that, other descriptions are the sevenfold power, the seven-layered power in the base of the spine of man. To come down to details, it is said to be composed of three currents, or force in three polarities, should we say, positive, negative, and neutral. So it is composed of three currents of electrical energy, which flow along three canals in the etheric and superphysical double of the spinal cord. Actually, in Indian occultism, these are named, or rather the canals, properly speaking, are named. There is Ida, and that's IDA, by the way, Ida, that is the negative current. Pingala, positive, and Sushumna, which is neutral. The word Sushumna in Sanskrit really meaning a tube. Yes, sometimes these names are wrongly applied to the forces themselves, but actually they should be applied to the canals. Ida, feminine, the name perhaps helps us remember. Pingala, masculine. Sushumna, neutral. Such, briefly, is Kundalini. When supernormally aroused, this fiery force ascends into the brain by a serpentine path. Hence its other name, the serpent fire. I suppose that later races of men will have this power awakened quite naturally as a result of evolutionary progress. At present it is playing through our bodies. In two particular ways. One is that which provides the nerve fluid so that our nerves can serve as messengers. Just as these wires and other message-carrying wires, energy-carrying wires, convey electricity. So the nerves serve us in the body. And then the other way in which it is manifest in all vertebrates, the teaching goes, is by the bestowal upon the body of its procreative urge and capacity. The sex impulse is due, it is said, to the presence of this power in man, its stimulation and play through the body. And by the by, yes, that is another reason why we should be very careful ourselves and in warning others against attempts to awaken this power, because acute abnormal sex excitation can also be the result. I know this is all rather abstract and difficult for you to visualize. The slides will, I hope, help as we go along. Well, what happens when the Kundalini is aroused in a disciple? Well, it in man, H.P. Blavatsky says, it is sheathed with care in the spinal cord. Chiefly, it resides almost asleep, not quite, as I've said, in the region of the sacrum at the base of the spine. That is the seat and center of the almost sleeping serpent fire. when it is aroused, it divides itself into three currents, as I've said, and these flow along three canals, or nadis, in and around the spinal cord, up into the head, into the brain, in fact. And these three currents each have their own path. And as you'll see from the pictures, they intertwine the spinal cord as they ascend. Sushumna, the neutral current, flows vertically or directly along an astroetheric tube or canal in the position or location of the center of the spinal cord. It doesn't have a serpentine pathway, but Ida arises on one side and Pingala on the other side of this vertical tube, and then they rise when all is well and the process is completed. They arise together. If you visualize a central column, then they arise together like this. And then they get drawn somehow towards the spinal cord. And they cross over and they meet again. And again, and again. Five times. Touching and arousing into supernormal activity the successive chakras or four centers in the etheric and superphysical bodies as they meet. And some of the force flows down these chakras, as we'll see from the pictures. Having reached the throat, and crossed over, Ida normally goes into the pineal gland, and Pingala, a current of electrical energy, into the pituitary gland, and Sushumna, having arisen between, through the third ventricle of the brain, and if all is well, again out through the Brahmarandra chakram or anterior fontanelle at the crown. Now this has a remarkable effect upon the brain, and particularly the consciousness of the ego in the brain. These two currents, which become centered, positive and negative, in the two glands, spark across, cause a sparking across, front to rear, and like this, like that. About that position, by the by. Whilst the Sushumna cuts that pathway and rises up between, as we'll see. The awakening into activity of the pituitary gland and the outpouring of the Kundalini fire therefrom between the eyebrows opens a force center there, the Ajna chakra, which, when properly opened and controlled, begins to bestow clairvoyant faculty. The other current going into the pineal arouses into activity the intuitive faculty, and the whole brain becomes enfired, so that the individual is highly perceptive and specially responsive to signals, as it were, in radio terms, from the inner self. so that the person can become illumined, you see, not only in fire in their intellectual capacity, but also intuitively and intellectually and spiritually an illumined individual. The effect upon the other chakras I'll talk about as we see the slides. I've used a word there which perhaps I ought also to define, chakra. Sanskrit word meaning a wheel, as doubtless most of you know, and descriptive of the appearance of the vortex or whirl of energy in the etheric and superphysical bodies at the place where a particular gland or nerve center is situated. There are seven of these in association with the coccygeal gland, the spleen, the solar plexus, nerve ganglion, the heart, throat, brow, pituitary, and pineal crown or Brahmarandra. So that the individual in whom they are fully aroused is a very remarkable spectacle to those who are able to see it. And one of my slides offers a suggestion of that appearance. One of the conditions under which a teacher would assist in the arousing of this tremendous cosmic fire in one person particularly, is complete altruism. The person must be entirely selfless, as far as human nature permits. Indeed, after a considerable self-disciplining in this direction, in which egoism and craving and the usual personal desires have been at least reduced considerably, perhaps to a minimum, then the additional faculty is used never for self and always for the world of men and the service of the world of men and the fulfillment of the great plan of the Logos of the solar system, who is the source of this tremendous power, the solar Logos. The sun is said to be the main source for our universe, and our planet Earth has a secondary reservoir in the very center of the Earth, and then every one of us has the third receiving and distributing station at the base of the spine. So you see, this force is everywhere present. The mighty creative life principle of universe, planet, nature, and man. Because I suppose of the dangers of premature arousing, knowledge concerning the method is it's revealed, but in allegorical forms. And many of the classical legends and scriptural allusions, particularly where there is a serpent, refer to this power and its awakening. But under the veil of allegory and symbol. The thought occurred to me as I was talking to you, which made me say that some of the fairy tales, you know, are legendary fairy tales. Well, they come from long, long ago, and they enshrine certain and profoundly occult truths under that veil. And it seems possible, for example, that the fairy tale of the Sleeping Beauty is one such. The Sleeping Beauty is Kundalini, the feminine creative life force, asleep in man normally, this body being the palace of sleep. And there it sleeps throughout the ages, as the story tells. And then there comes Prince Charming. You remember? Perhaps you'll interpret for yourselves whom he personifies. And what does he do? He moves towards the sleeping princess, the Sleeping Beauty, and kisses her. As a result, not only does she awaken, but the whole household awakens too. And then they marry. Probably referring to the resultant unification of personal and egoic consciousness, the true heavenly marriage, which in its turn is extended into a conscious realization of the unity of the spirit of man with the spirit which is God. Many of those fairy stories are susceptible of such interpretations.